Shut up. We're doing a podcast.
Okay, sorry.
Totally not pros, man. CSX, you're sitting inside the garage. Now, for the podcast, what we're going to do is every week, when we open the door to the garage, we're going to play a new Doors track. Well, not a new Doors track, because that would be freaking awesome if Jim Morrison was still alive. So I thought it'd open with Peace Frog. My name is Jim O'Brien. I'm moving left to right on your radio. Ryan, our producer, is here. Ryan, yeah. Logan.
Forgot my name
he
for a second.
He knows crap about racing, but we're still going to bring him in here. Because I actually like the fact that you were asking questions that I think a lot of people ask about NASCAR and racing that we can address.
Yep.
Sherry Powers is our engineer here and also one of the coolest NASCAR people I know.
You know.
What could you do? I got to butter up. Hold on a second. And our guest this week, Roger Curtis, the president of Michigan International Speedway. I have to kiss ass to the engineer. You know that, right? There he is. Hey, Rog.
Hey, what's going on?
Nothing. We were just kissing up to our engineer, Sherry, because she's sitting in here. And you got to be good to the technical people, right?
Oh, yeah, because they can make you be a superstar or a zero real quick.
I don't know why your mic sounds so bad, Jim. It's crazy.
I know. She always says that. You know, the worst thing in the world, I think it's like IT people and engineer, when you tell them there's a problem, they walk in and go, huh, never seen that before. You're like, oh, that's bad. So here we are, Roger. We're getting our Easter break in NASCAR, and are we all as happy as everybody? I know, Ryan, you're just kind of, Ryan's relatively new to watching the sport. Now, Sherry and I talked about it. Is this low downforce thing everything you were hoping for?
Yeah, it really is. You know, take Daytona out of it, because that's a restrictor plate race that saw an unbelievable finish, by the way. But once we took the restrictors off and started going full speed, let the drivers go as they can, the low downforce package, and hats off to Goodyear too for bringing great tires to the racetracks that you know are safe, yet there's fall off, and you have to manage your tires, and you have to think about their strategy. There's going fast. There's a little bit of everything in the mix right now, and we've seen some great racing. We've seen some photo finishes. Yeah, and so far, and the drivers love it, and the crew chiefs are excited. They have a new challenge, so I think it's a win-win for everyone in the sport right now.
I think it's a win-win for the fans, too. I mean, it's great racing to watch.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I was telling someone the other day who has drifted away from our sport, is a huge fan, and I said, hey, you need to give it a try again, because this is the kind of racing that I grew up with. A lot of lead changes. I think we had 26 out at Auto Club. Great finishes. And one in particular I can think of here on the West Coast swing, we saw Brad Keselowski, Michigan native and champion, former NASCAR Sprint Cup Series champion. In the last 20, 30 laps, he had to run down, not only catch, but then pass three cars, which he did, won the race. Last year, he wouldn't have been able to catch the cars, much less pass them, because of the dirty air created with the aerodynamics that the cars had last year. So I'm hearing rumors, guys, that they may even take more downforce out here before too long. And everyone I talk to in the garage out at Auto Club, drivers, manufacturers, Goodyear, crew chiefs, all of them said that the next thing they're going to tackle, in addition to even lower downforce, is the side force on the cars. And so I think that's great. This is putting more and more back into the driver's hands, which is exactly what we all want as race fans.
So wait a minute, Roger, you're saying like, so getting rid of some of the side drafting or letting the cars actually maybe drift a little bit more?
Yeah, letting them drift a little bit more, and I don't want to get too technical. You know, I failed as an engineer at Purdue. I can't get technical. So, but what the engineers were trying to tell me in layman's terms, that essentially you don't see a lot of cars spin out when you go into the turns at these high
speeds. Wait a minute, unless Casey Kane hits them.
Unless Casey Kane hits you, yes.
Yeah, then you do.
For no apparent reason whatsoever when you're lapped down. If Casey hits you, then you do spin out. But it was interesting. They said that the way the engineers have made these cars with the sheet metal, I mean, all these cars are made by hand, basically, in these race shops down in Charlotte. And these engineers have figured out a way, the aerodynamic engineers on the teams, that They can build the car in such a way that when you go in the corner, even if you went in too fast and you start to spin out and your back end starts to come around on you, the air will start pushing literally on the side of that car and straighten you out. So to, almost like if you're racing a slot car machine, and they want to get rid of that, because then if you overdrive the corner, i.e. you're not a good driver or you don't learn how to drive that corner, then you're going to spin out. Whereas now, you know, you may not win, you're probably not going to win the race driving that way, but you're not going to wreck either. So we'll see.
Well, Sherry, you and I have talked about this before. I mean, with the downforce stuff this year, and, you know, we get to see the better drivers. The whole idea is that the better drivers are going to win, right? When we're watching the races, you know, you watch Jimmy Johnson and you watch Harvick and you watch Brad, and you know, you see these close finishes and stuff. But how do you explain some of the drivers like Biffle? And I was joking about Casey Kane. And then you think about Kyle Larson, who grew up on dirt track, should be killing this, but he looks like, I know they had, was it a bad wreck last week for Larson?
Yeah, he hit really hard.
So how do you explain some of these drivers then that I always assume should be doing better with this kind of car, and they're not?
That's a great, great question, because it's particularly Kyle Larson, you know, growing up with the dirt track racing, as you noted, and inherently in that kind of racing, you are going through the corners very, very loose with the back end of the car about ready to spin out and slide around on you. And, you know, to now have that in a cup car and still not be able to acclimate the way that you would think that they would, I'm dumbfounded. Now, Biffle, in his defense, he was coming up through the field pretty good last week at Auto Club. He had to go to a backup because of, ironically, a practice wreck with him and Kyle Larson that was really neither one's fault. Biffle was making some headway, and his engine let go, so that was unfortunate for him. But, you know, Kyle Larson, he's just not good, and he hasn't been good in practice. He hasn't been good in qualifying. They've spun a lot. The races aren't there. So they're just coming to the track, seemingly not prepared and not where they need to be, and chasing it all weekend. And I think everyone knows in a sport this advanced, this technical, this complicated, the competition being phenomenal. You can throw a blanket over the top 20 on any given race weekend. If you don't unload your car ready to go and you're pretty close top 10, maybe top 12, you're probably not going to make a lot of headway in the limited practice sessions and then certainly for the race. So you got to do a lot of homework, and it just doesn't seem like for whatever reason right now, still very early in the season, that Ganassi Racing has figured that out yet.
Didn't that make any sense? I mean, it's Ganassi Racing, though. This isn't like a startup racing team. This isn't, you know, two guys who decided to bolt a bumper on a car. I mean, this is a huge team in multiple forms of racing. So it's got to reflect on him, doesn't it?
I think it reflects on a lot of things. I mean, they obviously have some very talented people over there. I spent quite a bit of time with Kyle's crew chief, Chad Johnson, this weekend, who is an Indiana native like myself and graduated from Indiana State like myself. So I have to defend them a little bit, but they're new. They're brand new to each other. They didn't work together last year. Chemistry has a lot to do. I mean, we see this in every sport, guys, not just NASCAR. I mean, NASCAR is not immune from that. That you can throw a bunch of all-stars out on the field or the court, and if there's not some chemistry there, a team with no all-stars or maybe only one or two all-stars that does have chemistry can come in and beat that team. And we see it in every form of sports all the time, and NASCAR is no different.
Now, Sherry is a huge Dale Earnhardt fan, a junior fan. Well,
yes,
both, actually. In both.
Yeah.
It's fair to say both, right?
Oh, very much.
Absolutely. So watch this. So how many championships does Junior have, Roger? I don't have Google in front of me, so I'm trying to find that. I'm trying to Google the number. How many does he have? How many does he have
now?
That's
a tough one. I think it's zero.
Yeah.
So I understand we all love him, and he's really fun, and he's a great driver. He's a good driver, but is there a point where we just kind of accept him that he's going to be that guy who will maybe get a win or two every year, but he's never going to win a championship?
It could be that we do end up there. I'm gonna.
Roger, I'm getting a scrunchy face from Sherry right now. Like, why did you bring this up, you fat jerk? Why? Why?
You know, they say radio is theater of the mind, but I can actually see that face right now.
There's no more air in this room right now. I can't even breathe, man. It's an honest question, though. I mean, come on.
No, it's
eventually,
fair.
Right?
I'm gonna withhold judgment for a couple more years because he honestly was making some tremendous progress with his old crew chief, and unfortunately he wanted to not travel as much, and I respect that, and be with the family a little bit more. He's got a brand new crew chief now, and we just got done talking about chemistry. I thought they made a lot of inroads last year and showed tremendous progress. You know, not just on the restrictor plate races where we know Junior is really good, where Hendrick Motorsports is good. So none of those are surprises when they perform well at Daytona and Talladega. But to see particularly the chase races, the mile-and-a-half tracks, you know, his win at Martinsville last year. Of course, it was spring, I guess it was. But, you know, to see his performances on some of the shorter tracks was really good. And I think just as their communication continues to improve, you're going to see Junior continue to improve. You just have to get comfortable with each other. It's like a quarterback and a wide receiver in football. And you can run perfect patterns and you can throw perfect spirals but in practice. But when game time comes out and all these conditions change and there's other players out there, in this case other drivers, and you got to make up some things on the fly, it's just repetition, and communication that you finally like, okay, I know what he's going to do in this situation. I'm going to do this and vice versa. And so I just want to wait. I want to wait the rest of this year before I make that same judgment as you just did, Jim.
Well, and you, thank you. Well, you talk about chemistry and I, you know, being a junior fan and a big NASCAR fan, I do have the in-car at home. I have, you know, several computers and my phones and everything. And you can hear the chemistry between Junior and his crew chief and his spotter, and you can tell that, I mean, especially last year, I mean, it was just like, oh, why is he leaving? But, you know, even this year, you can tell that the chemistry is starting to mesh. So it's good to hear. And
so they're relaxed when they're lapped down. They're talking to each other. It's very relaxed. It's very comfortable when they're a couple laps off the pace. That's good.
He's not had that bad of a year yet.
No, he hasn't.
I know. I'm just kidding. Roger was quiet, like, wait a minute. Does he know what the hell he's talking about? What the hell are you doing, dude? Taking him at. Now, I think everybody, now to be honest, you as the president at Michigan National Speedway, if Dale Earnhardt Jr. won a championship, what would it do for the sport?
Oh, it'd be huge. But, you know, he's already the most popular driver. So
I understand, but I'm talking about to the non-fan. Like, Ryan, I mean, you know who Dale Earnhardt Jr. is.
Oh, yeah.
So if he won a championship, would that make you more or less likely to start tuning into races?
I think it would help a little bit to get it. But just to go back to get people to start watching, I think with you guys talking about it being more, you know, more competitive and throwing a blanket over all these guys, I think that's really what's getting in and the cups, the championship at the end that
yeah,
they go
chase.
For the chase that yeah. that I think that's really sweet, because when they put that into golf, I think you saw a couple more people following it for the entire, you know, the entire season, not just watching the, you know, Daytona 500 and then okay, that's it for the rest of the year, you know, or here and there watching it. I think that helps too with people like me who are, you know, just getting into
it. You want to see something exciting. You don't want the, why do you watch cars go around in circles?
Yeah, do you get to lobby at all, Roger, for one of the chase races? Is that, how does that work? I mean, can you go to the France family and say, we want this and here's why?
Yeah, we actually were approached a few years ago about taking the first race of the chase, the first playoff race, and we opted not to. I mean, candidly, just because we have so much camping here. We have about 8,000 campers come on our race weekends. I think it's the largest or second largest in the sport. It's us or Talladega, one of the two, always leading in camping. And my fear was going in the middle of September, we were going to lose a lot of that camping because of schools being back in session.
Back to school. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and it is Michigan, so we could get snow.
So, you know, we talked about it, but I like our dates. And, you know, the way the chase is set up now and winning a race almost guarantees that you're going to be in the playoffs. these regular season games count a lot more than they do in some of the other sports. I mean, you can go on a 5, 8, 10-game losing streak in baseball and probably even the NHL, really, when you think about it. Our regular season is probably a lot more like college football and the NFL. And that these regular season games, races, really do matter. Yeah, the playoffs are still the playoffs. You know, certainly a heightened sense of you have opportunities to move on or you're done as far as the championship goes. And, you know, after our race in June, if you didn't win, you've still got some weeks to win and get in the playoffs. But I think there's that heightened sense that there's a lot more importance now on our regular season than maybe what there used to be when they raced. Whoever had the most points at the end of the year won, because you can points race. You don't have to go out and try and win races to get in the playoffs. And fans, particularly the casual fans like we're talking about, were like, what? The guy finished fourth and he gets out of the car and says it was a good points day? I want to see competition. I want to see a guy get out or Danica or whoever get out and say, I'm furious because I didn't win the race. So we've created that now.
Well, it's even. I'm sorry, Jim.
No, go ahead,
it's even great when
it's
they
just my
when
podcast.
You when you not today.
Hey, best line. That's the greatest line.
A technical person.
Not today.
What's nice is when they have a win and they're already in the chase. They take more chances, and it's fun racing to watch. You know, they'll say, okay, you know, we're gonna take two instead of four, or we're gonna try to push the gas, or we're just gonna race and see where it's at. That makes it very much exciting too.
I agree. Hey, Ryan had a great question before we were gonna get on the air with this, or actually recording this, Roger. This is a good one about Daytona. What was your question?
Yeah, so I was wondering, why is that first race Daytona 500? Why do they have that their biggest race at the start of the year?
You know, it's just the way that it shook out historically. You know, no one sat down year one of the Daytona 500 and said, let's make the first race of the year the biggest race of the year. NASCAR started in Daytona. They wanted the first race to be basically at the home office. And it was the first major super speedway. I mean, Darlington was a little bit older, but this was a big deal when they built Daytona. They used to run on the beaches at Daytona, and so when they built this 2.5-mile super speedway and started racing there, it was a big deal, and it caught on very, very quickly. And just the nuances then of it's warm in Florida in the winter in February, and it's cold elsewhere. When our sport started to go on TV, it drew a lot of eyeballs because people were indoors, they weren't outside, and so it ended up getting some of the best ratings. You always had close finishes at Daytona. It kind of naturally, organically just morphed into being our Super Bowl. But on the tail end of that now, you mentioned the playoffs earlier, the championship race has become our Final Four. Four, it whittles down to four drivers. First one to cross the finish line at Miami wins. So I would say the championship weekend at Miami is now a very, very close second to the Daytona 500.
You should finish in Daytona. Yeah. You and I have had that discussion multiple times. I still feel give Homestead a race, but not the last one. Do it at Daytona. You've got a built-in Super Bowl stadium. That's what it's there for. Let them run at Daytona.
I don't know if we're ever going to see that with restrictor plates, though, because so much is out of the driver's hands with those races. But I agree with you from a standpoint of the icon that is Daytona, you know, starting and ending and bookending the season. I totally agree with you there. But I think as long as we have restrictor plates, we're not going to see that happen.
All right. Well, Roger, I don't want to keep you too long here. Laura's like, we're best buddies. Roger Curtis, president of Mission International Speedway at MIS. Roger, I want to touch on a couple things real quick before we let you go. Gene Haas, the sixth place finish at the F1 race in Australia.
Yeah, how about that?
$1 billion in the first 4 years is what they're going to invest to be in Formula One. Does that help other motorsports like NASCAR when a team like Haas actually makes an impact in an international sport like F1?
I think it just makes us all here in the United States proud of Gene and the fact that he has a lot of ties to NASCAR. I don't know that it gives, especially when you hear how much he's spending, I don't think it makes you and I jump up and down and say, let's go buy a cup team. But I
ain't making that
really
much off band medals.
Of
yeah, you're not going to see the band medals dodge anytime soon. I could get one of those because they don't race them anymore. Yeah.
But I will say this, rumors are out there, and I think they're more than rumors. So where there's smoke, there's fire kind of thing. And Brian France even alluded to it this last weekend at Auto Club. I do think in the next year or two, three at the most, you're going to see some new manufacturers in NASCAR.
Hmm. Interesting.
Nissan?
I think they might be one, and I think Audi with the Volkswagen brand might be one. I mean, I don't want to speculate because I really am guessing here. But...
Oh, God, the rednecks raging about the Germans and the Japanese in NASCAR. Can you just imagine this? Oh, good Lord. I'm just, Roger, I know your side. Come on,
yeah,
it's going to happen. It's
going to
happen. It's like, God damn. Right, I got the Germans and the Japanese racing them cars. Round the rouse again.
You know, I sigh because you're right, but I also know this, that if you're not changing, you're falling behind.
Hey, I've always said, I mean, the new world we live in with the automotive industry, yep, even here in Detroit, would you buy a car that is from an American company that's built overseas or a foreign company that's built here in the United States? It's not as clear cut as it used to be. So I don't think people really feel that way like we used to. I don't.
Some still do.
Some still do. I mean, some still do, but for the most part, no. But, well, that's cool to read. And then Indy, I was just real quick, I wanted to bring up IRL because I thought they had a great race in the road course. However, it used to be all about the ovals with IRL racing. You know, with open wheel racing, it was all about, and it's not. So they're kind of getting back to that. And I know you and I have talked about this before, but they've got to get back to the ovals. And I know they're going to race in California, and I know that you've talked to them in the past, but... My one thought would be, remember IROC? It folded, 2008? The International Race of Champions?
Love that.
If you really want to promote both of the big series in the United States, why don't you do a NASCAR versus IndyCar in IROC racing? Just the two series.
Yeah, I don't, you know, for whatever reason, IROC just, it had its heyday and then it just really faded away. And that was great because you brought all the best drivers from open wheel and stock car, sports cars. I mean, don't forget there were some great sports car drivers in IROC too. And you ran ovals and road courses there. It was a really cool little series, but that faded away. And I agree with you on open wheel racing, IndyCar series, going to ovals. I wish they would go to more outside of Texas and Indianapolis, though. You look, I mean, they're going to places like Phoenix and Milwaukee, which are slower tracks. I think they're very concerned about high-speed ovals like us and Auto Club. So we'll see. I mean, they're trying to get their series together. I think they have some good leadership there, but it still really is, unfortunately, and I don't say this because I'm taking a shot at them. I'm saying this because I hope for the best. I wish for the best, but they seem a little discombobulated right now. And outside the Indianapolis 500, it's hard to get. You think that NASCAR is struggling at times to get casual fans interested in the whole season. I mean, IndyCar doesn't even really have casual fans outside the Indy 500, period. So, one race. So, we'll see. I hope for the best.
Roger Curtis, president of Michigan International Speedway, MISpeedway.com, for ticket packages, and like you mentioned earlier in the podcast, camping as well. Always a great follow on Twitter as well, MISRoger. I love the fact that you still talk to the fans on social media because a lot of people in your position don't do that anymore.
That's why I'm here, though. I mean, if there's no fans, I don't have a job. So, I consider that literally the first and foremost number one priority on my job description is visiting with fans, explaining to fans, listening to fans. So if I don't do that, I'm in big trouble. So I love it.
Okay, and I'm going to ask everybody when they come in the garage for this podcast, the term I'm doing air quotes, user-friendly for a car. User-friendly being that you can actually do more than just drive in the car, if you understand where I'm going with this, Roger. What is the most user-friendly car in your mind, or maybe one you've tried something in?
Oh, geez. User-friendly car?
Yeah, I can't, you know, I'm sitting, it would be awkward to certain people. I go, what's, trying to make a move on somebody. I had a Vega hatchback in high school. Never had any action. None. But I really considered it a user-friendly car because it had the fold down. Now, nothing ever happened, but still. I mean, it was in my mind's eye. So I tried it in a Fiero once. Shut up, Sherry. You're laughing
at me.
If you
mean it that way, I'm telling you, on our Faster Horses weekend, it's any car you bring out here.
Bed of a truck.
It is. Oh, really?
Hood of a truck.
It doesn't matter what you bring out here at Faster Horses.
Is Purell sponsoring that this year, or are they?
I'm just saying it's very interesting. 9 months after Faster Horses, there's a lot of kids named Luke and Brian being there.
And you're like walking around smoking a cigarette going, I don't even smoke, but I felt like I had to do that after this. I'm going to take a Silkwood shower. I feel fine, man. Roger, it's always great talking to you. Be well, buddy.
All right. Take care. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much.
We'll do it again. There he goes. Roger Curtis in the garage. That was fun, guys. Thank you for coming in here, too.
Hey, thanks for asking.
I know. Well,
thanks for allowing me.
Yes.
God, it was so sensitive. User-friendly car. Ryan and I were talking about this before, Sherry. Mm-hmm. Neither one of us had any luck in a car. I did try in a Fiero once, parked at a beach in Connecticut. It didn't work well. Yeah, it's like you're 6'5", it's like a pretzel move. It didn't work.
So you just
John Holmes wouldn't have worked in the car. That's all I'm saying.
You just got to get like an old Bronco and rip everything out, just plastic everything. Or like an old work van.
Plastic just, everything? Wait, okay. Wait a minute.
Hey, hold on. Hold on.
Free like candy?
I'm going to kill you in the back yeah. of the Bronco.
Or you put like that
Rhino liner
on it so you can just hose everything out.
Get in the back of my car. Yeah. I've got it all covered in Visqueen. It puts the lotion on the skin, else it gets the hose again.
Sherry?
Yes.
Use your friendly car. Come on. You've actually got a Ford. You've got the Explorer.
Yeah, I got a Ford Explorer.
User friendly,
but when Mike and I were dating, he had a GMC Stepside truck.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. See, all of a sudden I'm talking like Wisconsin, like your aunt from Wisconsin. Oh, yeah.
Oh. Nothing, you know, just major PG, maybe a little PG-13, but it was nice.
He was leading the American League of Doubles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those horse and buggies, though, must have been pretty good for you guys, right?
Shut up. What an ass. No, they weren't, though. They bounced around all the time. The horses look at you going, that ain't nothing.
Yeah, I can't take the smell.
I thought you were the horse.
Puts you out of the mood, yeah.
That was well before Axe Body Spray. All right, we're going to get out of here. So that's how it's going to work every week in the garage here on CSX. We'll be talking to lots of folks. Hope we get Roger Penske on. I want to get Brad Keselowski on and argue with him about pit lanes, all forms of racing and stuff, just the automotive industry, too. There's a lot going on in the Motor City. Thank you for joining us in the garage. I'm going to get my horse and buggy.